The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 27th of February, 2020. On the podcast today, Simon Potter, Chief Executive Officer of Bahamas Petroleum, BPC's ticker there, and Simon discusses the significance of the environmental authorization granted for their Perseverance 1 well. Also on the podcast, Nicolao Sarandou, CEO of Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO's ticker there, and Nicolao describes the business and recent commercial agreements. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And if you do receive an RNS via the app, which is free to download, and you like the contents of that, don't forget to hit that thumbs up button. And I could be talking about it on the podcast right here, and it will be involved in featured, included in that list right there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon Potter, Chief Executive Officer of Bahamas Petroleum Company's BPC ticker. Simon, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
And it's not. Well, do you know what? Your share price is in the green. I'm looking around and all I can see is pretty much red. The last few days have been the same, so it's nice to see a company in up on news today. And of course, you've released environmental authorization news, which is very significant. We'll get into that in a bit. As always, though, Simon, for someone listening right now who's not familiar with Bahamas Petroleum, there's a little bit of a hint in the title. Could you just summarize the company, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it's only just over a year ago that we received a notice from the government that we had secure license tenure for 2 years over our licenses in the southern Bahamas adjacent to the Cuban border. And so only 6 months ago, we put together a plan to the AGM of the shareholders where we sought to enact a plan to deliver our obligation, which is to drill a well. We look to source a rig. We've managed to access a dual derrick drill ship built in 2014 with a managed pressure drilling system, which makes it one of the most technically capable rigs in the world. So we have our rig. We look to contract services. So we brought on board Halliburton and Baker Hughes, and subsequently we've completed our logistics contracting with boats and helicopters. Mm-hmm. We put the team together to design the well and bring it to fruition. And our insurance auditors has described this illustrious group as an experienced team with global operator pedigree. So, as I say, we've designed the well. We've called it Perseverance Number 1, although my American colleagues would call it Perseverance. It's located on the northern segment of the B structure, looking to target close to a billion barrels, 0.8 of a billion barrels, which in the event of success, we'll de-risk the whole of the B structure, which will access over 2 billion barrels, which we're drilling at 100% equity. Then we sought to put together a finance package, a structured finance package that looked to deliver cash for us when we needed it. And ultimately, we've secured up to about $36 million. Initially, we had an open offer with the shareholders, putting our shareholders first. We followed that up with a placing. We've put in place a convertible note. We've put in place a mutual fund in the Bahamas to allow Bahamian nationals to invest in the company. We've added another unconditional facility recently. And of course, in the background, we are still engaged with multiple parties on the farm out front. So that sort of describes the background of the project. And finally, permitting. We needed to secure environmental authorization from the Bahamian government in order to carry out the work on Perseverance 1. And that's what we have announced today, the receipt of that environmental authorization from the government.
Yeah, wow. Do you know what? This, the logistics of drilling, you know, a big well like this, high impact kind of thing, is massive. You know, it's very complex. And but would you say, you know, many big bricks and small bricks that need to go into the wall kind of thing? Would you say this is probably the final big brick, or is there one or two others?
this is one of the most important milestones we can conceive. I mean, this process, and maybe I'll just describe the process that we've gone through. Yeah. It commenced in 2010. We started collecting data and we submitted an initial environmental impact assessment in 2012. And that was accepted by the government at the time. But really, in the post-Macondo world, the government then set about a process to sort of modernize and strengthen its regulations, and they introduced a new concept of environmental authorization, which comprises the need for an environmental impact assessment, but then also an environmental management plan. Not unusual in the international oil industry, but we made our initial application in 2018. Now, this isn't just us submitting a document. This is a process. It's a process managed on behalf of the government by the ministry. They then have an advisory body, the BEST Commission, the Bahamas Environment Science and Technology Commission, who then in turn employ third-party consultants to advise them. So really, in the 2 years since 2018, we've been going backwards and forwards, closing gaps, working on bits and pieces as the government sort of applies guidelines of industry best practices and global standards, but really guidelines that sort of come from the IFC, the World Bank and other industry bodies, really to hold us to account, to deliver performance standards on environmental and social sustainability that they can be proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. And just take us through, so what's the potential here if it's successful?
Well, the potential here, as I said, we've zeroed in on the area that we'll drill, which is the B North segment of the very large B structure. The B structure is over 400 square kilometres of closure, and the B North part of it is just, like I said, a restricted part of it, but the part that we think is technically the best to drill that is 0.8 of a billion barrels that we would target. But as I say, it's a connected structure, and that would sort of de-risk over 2 billion barrels of potential just in that single structure.
Marvellous stuff. Excellent stuff. Okay. And so what's it, you mean, you must, feel quite excited now. You're not far away from the actual, the big day. Everything's slotted into place. You must feel quite optimistic.
Well, we're very optimistic. I mean, maybe just the final point to sort of, highlight about the environmental application. I mean, it's not just about the environment. There are social aspects to it, which include sort of community and stakeholder engagement. It includes occupational health, which, as all of your listeners will be thinking about the coronavirus and its spread around the world, we're putting in place procedures and processes to ensure that the rig and indeed the execution of the drilling program isn't interrupted. It covers safety management systems and policies. It also includes security. There are isolation zones around rigs. So, how are we going to enforce that? And then, of course, at the end of the day, it's about the environment. And we've done a whole series of unique sort of mapping operations to detail the fauna and flora, unique in the Bahamas, across the western part of the Bahamas, close to where we're drilling. Now, from here, we need to make that live. So we'll certainly carry on with exercises that ensure that those plans and procedures will operate seamlessly in the actual execution of the well. And really, in the final run-up to commencing the well, it's all about logistics planning, ensuring everything is on the rig as and when we need it. So, a busy period, but certainly laying down this milestone of environmental authorization from the government has been an extraordinarily important milestone for us to achieve today.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Simon, well, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, well, I hope, just in this brief piece that we're highlighting, we're saying what we're going to do and then actually go and do it. We're doing what we said that we would do. So certainly we're all about delivering the project. I think the second thing is as always, we're drilling this at 100% equity at the moment, and the scale of the structure where, this well pre-drill is 0.8 of a billion barrels. And the final thing, Justin, would be timing. this isn't next year, it's not the year after. You know, Spud is looking to be within roughly a month's time, with results thereafter, sort of 60 days, 90 days thereafter. So, yeah, you know, we're doing what we're saying we're going to do. This, the huge scale potential here, and it's imminent.
Marvellous, sir. Simon, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nicolas Salandor, CEO of Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO is ticker there. Nicolas, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, I'm familiar with Advanced Oncotherapy. I've been following your story for a while. But for people not familiar with Advanced Oncotherapy, Nicolas, can you just explain, summarise what the business is all about, please?
Sure. So we're a company listed in the UK with an operational centre in Geneva, in Switzerland. We're developing a game-changing technology for treating essentially all types of solid tumours. We are a CERN spin-off, and our technology is therefore the result of decades of work at CERN, which is probably today the largest physics lab in the world, and in fact, home of the Large Hadron Collider. Mm-hmm. That technology is a proton beam therapy technology, which is really set to disrupt the entire global radiation oncology market. Proton therapy is a very effective means of treating cancer using radiation. It's well proven. It's been used since the 50s, but sadly, it's very expensive and therefore not something that is widely available. So the goal is to develop a more affordable and accessible type of proton therapy. Our product is called Light, which is easier to install. You can install the machines modules by modules directly into a hospital. It has a proton beam that has a much smaller size, meaning you can deliver a treatment that is much more targeted. And also, you can actually change the energy of the beam, the energy essentially being essential because it tells you where radiation is deposited in the body, and you can change that energy 200 times per second, which allows you to treat moving targets. So we have plans underway to install a first commercial system in Daresbury in the UK for testing and validation, and we have recently signed 3 commercial collaborations, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. And finally, we also have patents and know-how in hand, and that's really giving us the significant barriers to entry, which is probably why we had top leaders at competitive firms joining us over the years.
Excellent stuff. So can you just explain then, so you mentioned that it's for proton therapy. What is proton therapy, you know, what is it used to treat then?
Mm-hmm. So to start with, what is proton therapy and what is used? So we're dealing here with radiation, and radiation is used for imaging. But if you deliver a higher dose of radiations, you can also treat tumors by disrupting the DNA. Radiation is essentially used today for most of the solid tumors. And in fact, radiation is used in up to 2/3 of the cancer cases in the U.S. It's by far the cheapest way of treating cancer. Now, proton therapy is a type of radiation. It's only 0.7% of the entire radiation market, which is largely X-rays. But it has a major benefit. It delivers most of its killing energy directly at the tumor. So it is a very highly targeted approach, and with proton therapy, you can therefore spare up to 60% of the healthy tissues surrounding the tumor. And that's very significant because if you consider tumors which are near sensitive tissues, and I think of the brain or head and neck, but also if you're thinking about children, it's extremely relevant and important for them because their cells divide more quickly as a result of their growth. And so children are more likely to suffer from the long-term side effects of radiation. We should also not forget one thing. Cancer is becoming more and more a disease that can be controlled over a long time. And so being able to spare healthy tissues presents a huge cost for a huge cost benefit. now, we have never seen, in all the discussions we had, we have never seen a client challenging the benefit of proton therapy. And to put it simply, if you irradiate just the tumor, but there's no radiations in the surrounding tissue, then of course that has to be better than conventional radiotherapy, where X-rays delivers radiations all along the path on the tumor, but on the healthy tissues. But the challenge here is not so much about the effectiveness of the treatment, is all about the cost and to make it in an affordable way. And that's really where we're filling a clear gap. And in fact, the announcement we've made recently with three grand hospitals, I think really shows that we are here to really fill a clear gap where we intend to deliver the right technology with the right and improved medical outcomes, but more importantly, at a much much better cost.
Yeah. Okay, and you've announced a number of partnerships recently. Can you tell me about these, please, Nicolas?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the first one, maybe I don't take them in order, but the first one was a collaboration with the University Hospitals Birmingham NHS Foundation Trust. It's a very large groups of hospital under the NHS arm, and they provide services for essentially Birmingham, but more broadly speaking, for the West Midlands. And as part of our transactions, we are essentially installing a light system on the UHB campus, but also, and very importantly, we have a common desire to work together on research and development activities in such a way that we can then promote light and increase the awareness of proton therapy. And if I just mention one of the initiatives, one of them is actually delivering flash. And with flash, the opportunity here is to treat patients in just one visit, as opposed to what is done traditionally with 20 or 30 visits. So that's one area clearly of investigation. And part of the agreement includes a revenue sharing arrangements with UHB. Now, a few days before that announcement, we also announced a sale of light to the Mediterranean Hospital of Limassol in Cyprus. And that was for considerations of 50 million euros for three treatment rooms. In addition to these 50 million euros, we will also receive a share of a net profit from the clinical services at that hospital. And a bit earlier in the month, we also announced a partnership with a London clinic for the operation of the Harley Street site. Essentially, we are providing light, and the London clinic is going to source and manage the staffing, the governance, a number of services which are necessary to support the operation. We will also be leasing parts of the London clinic's premises to install a second treatment room. And that's very important because, of course, we can increase the throughput of patients, but also the profit that can be made by the operating company. And finally, and I just want to mention it, even though it's not a pure commercial partnerships, but in December, we announced a partnership with the Cleveland Clinic. This is a very large academic medical center in Cleveland, and the agreement we have with them essentially is a scientific collaboration to assess how the quality of a proton beam, which, by the way, can be 10 times smaller than what is being done today, to which extent that quality of the beam delivers a more conformal treatment. So put it differently, to which extent the radiations can be better deposited on all spots of your tumors, which unfortunately always have irregular shapes.
I see. And you mentioned there that there's sort of different kinds of, you know, reimbursement models. How does that work for the company then, Nicola?
Yeah, so I think this, if you actually look at the announcement for whether it's Birmingham or whether it's Cyprus or the site in Harley Street, we intend to receive a share of the profit made by the center. So I think if I kind of step back for a second, The traditional business model for large scale medical equipment, such as proton therapy, has always been for the provider of a technology to essentially offer a system and to sell a system outright. And then for the operators to buy that the machine and to run it. Now, obviously, that means for the providers of a technology that the business can be bumpy. And that's even more pronounced if we consider that any projects for setting up a center in proton therapy are highly complex. They involve a lot of parties, whether it's the operator, the provider of the technology, the development company for the building, the financing parties. I mean, there's a very long list of different stakeholders and different skills. And here we have the opportunity to capture a share of the profit of a center as essentially what I would qualify a project manager, organizing all the different aspects of setting up a proton therapy center. This has for us, this has many benefits to essentially, which allow us to build up a large and sustainable source of cash flows on top of the sales of the machine, on top of the contracts for maintenance, which usually have a very long time frame. But also, we are really in a unique position to implement this strategy. And that's, I think, for two reasons. One is our machine can be moved and dismantled. So essentially, it means we can use our machine as a security in any financing deal. And that's very important because we can then help the customer providing the right financing tool together with some of the partners. And secondly, the treatment cost per patient is also expected to be much lower because of the design of light, which significantly is reducing the building cost. And that means that a center doesn't have to kind of bet on a high number of patients to service the debt. It's a much more viable and attractive business model for the hospital. And that's the model that we have in our agreements with UHB, with the London Clinic and the hospital in Cyprus. And that's definitely something that we want to continue, which we think is the right thing for us in terms of business model, but also in terms of aligning the interest between us, the hospital, and the different source of financing for the project.
Okay, all right. And take us through what the current state of play is for the development of light.
Mm-hmm. So the light technology, to start with, has been really widely tested in a non-clinical setting at CERN, here on a campus here in Geneva. We have established a UK testing and assembly site for the first light system in Daresbury. And that's where we plan to validate the system with the continued commitments of treating the first patients by the end of 2020. We recently announced that all the key hardware for the system have been manufactured. So really the next steps are to continue on assembling the different components and very importantly to continue the process of documentation which is needed for the certification of the system. And in the UK we are talking about a CE mark process. Once that's complete, we will then commence the installations in Harley Street and also in the other places where we sign recent agreements.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Nicola, well, one final thing to do. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
Okay. Well, first of all, we are developing a product that's going to meet an overwhelming demand for proton therapy. That treatment is delivered today. It's well understood, but it's delivered in only about 200 treatment rooms in the world. But the need is actually almost 50 times bigger, and that's only if we're assuming that 20% of the radiation treatments should be delivered with protons. And of course, if the cost of proton therapy was to come down at a price similar to X-ray, then the opportunity is even bigger. Mm. Secondly, I would actually say that we've developed technology that has many advantages over the traditional systems. It can be installed much more easily, modules by modules, and that basically means we can install this machine in an existing site, as we are actually looking at in Harley Street. And that's in contrast to all the other projects where project managers have to excavate a lot of soils, make a big hole, to put the machines, a machine often with a weight of 90 tons, with more than 300 tons of magnets. So it's huge and complex project. And all of these things can actually be avoided simply by virtue of the design of the light machines. But not only that, this machine also allows to deliver more precise treatments, and that's exactly what physicians have been looking for. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, the technology that we're using is well known, and that's probably exemplified by some of the recent announcements we made, where we announced high-profile institutions already willing to associate their names with this technology, even though the product has not been certified yet. And this comes on top of a team that includes some of the most senior people joining from competition and a lot of industry experts. So all of that gives us great confidence about what we're trying to achieve, which I think is very unique. And it all comes back to one simple thing, which is the design of a linear accelerator, which is light.
Excellent stuff. Nicola, it's very good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
With pleasure. Thanks, Justin.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, NMC Health. That's pretty much a non-mover. £9.38 is the price there. At four, Cobra Resources. 1.45 pence down, 23.6%. Wow. At three, it's BVC, or Batm Advanced Communications. I did see the RNS this morning, actually. They've got a new coronavirus kit, and they're up 18.58% to 48.5 pence. At two, Symphony Environmental Technologies, down today 4%. It was up massively yesterday, of course, on the FDA approval of one of their products. 17.75 pence today. Number one most followed company is Eddie Stobart Logistics, 9.75 pence, down 18%, down now, oh wow, it just jumped, down 28%. Let me just say something, there's lots of people on Twitter punting this stock, and I just assume these people like gambling without any regards towards odds and stuff, because this is a company who just stated its net debt is 215 million, all right, and the company's market cap is at the moment 32 million. And they're making a loss. Now, debt kills companies, okay? It sinks them. And we've seen this recently with Thomas Cook Group. We saw it with Carillion. We saw it with Debenhams. You know, it's happened over and over again. And these people were punting those on Twitter then. All I'm saying is this. It's a known risk. Debt, if you can't service it, will drown a company. It'll take it out, okay? Now, there are plenty of companies on the stock market. There's, 2,000 listed companies on the stock market. Many of them don't have issues with debt. When your debt is four times your valuation and you can't chip away at that debt, it just grows. The interest on it grows and you end up drowning. So I don't understand why people are punting this company. There are decent companies out there to invest in or punt on that don't have this amount of risk. I'm assuming they think the reward is massive. And they're saying, oh, it's dropped 90%. Yeah, but do you know what? Consider this. Even now, it's maybe not cheap, because its debt is four times its valuation. You imagine being four times underwater, the water being above your head four times, and slowly that water, you know, getting deeper. That's what's happening. Why do you choose that company? There's plenty of... It's a known risk. Avoid it. There are plenty of unknown risks we don't see, like the coronavirus comes out of left field, you know? So if you know about a risk, try and avoid it. You don't need to invest in that company. There are plenty other companies. Okay, so listen, before you get enticed into investing into that company, know that there's a lot of risk there. A lot of risk, okay? All right. At five, Harvest Minerals. I'm just annoyed at people just really ramping stocks, just trying to, you know, for them to get a 10-20% without actually showing the risk that's involved in a company, you know. Okay, top five most liked RNSs. Harvest Minerals, non-issue of performance shares. At four, Howdens Joinery, Howden Joinery Group PLC, preliminary results. At three, Richland Resources, Holdings and Company. Really? At two, Open Orphan, appointment of new director. And number one, most liked RNS, is Keffi Minerals, Hawaii Exploration Project Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.